From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, May 15th, 2012. This weekly podcast brings you the latest information on geospatial technology and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief, today in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, today in State College, Pennsylvania.
Last week, GeoEye valued Digital Globe at $792 million in an unexpected takeover move. Some thought this was a low number. Certainly Digital Globe did. Within the last 5 years, we've had an incredible buying spree of geospatial technology companies. And it got me thinking, how do you value any geospatial tech company? Especially when the market researchers continue to stumble on the size of the overall geospatial market. Is the intrinsic value of geospatial companies tied to something else? We'll tackle that and more. But first, a word from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Intergraph. Is your GIS at a gridlock, limited to a few, contained and locked away? GeoMedia Smart Client engages individuals and departments to collectively ignite your dynamic GIS. Geographic changes are interactively implemented across an enterprise-wide smart GIS, seamlessly integrating into configurable workflows. Users leverage advanced geospatial functionality via simple-to-use map-based tools, streamlining their processes to build a smart GIS. Discover the power of geography and build a smarter organization with GeoMedia Smart Client. Learn more at intergraph.com/geospatial. So last week, GeoEye valued Digital Globe at $792 million in a takeover attempt, and some thought that was a low number. I want to emphasize the word thought, and I emphasize that because there are some pretty standard ways to evaluate the value of a company. Now, I'm not a financial analyst, and while my MBA allows me to understand some wonderful financial terms, I couldn't tell you how to do a proper company valuation. And I've been involved in some respects in how to value companies, and it's always about placing a value on the expected revenue plus some premium to that amount. Like if we were to place a premium on a value of a brand like Coca-Cola, for example, and sometimes it's based on the predicted growth of a market. Well, where in the last 10 years have we seen a forecasted growth model for geospatial technology that was worth the paper it was written on? And I would say the same applies to the mobile location space. Back in the 2005 era, mobile location based advertising was going to boom, and it really still hasn't boomed, but there may be signs now. So it really got me thinking about what's happened over the last 5 years. We've had these takeovers, and they all seem to occur right around the 2007 time period. Nokia bought Navtech for $8.1 billion. You know, was it worth it? Well, you know, it's hard to say. Nokia is having trouble right now, and they're reorganizing the location and commerce division. TomTom bought Teleatlas for something like 2 billion euros. Hexagon bought Intergraph for $2.1 billion. It really got me thinking, where do you place the value on that on the price of a company? You could look at the bottom line revenue, but there's got to be something else. So that's where I want to start, Adina, is how do you put a value on geospatial technology? Does it come down just to revenue and profits, or is it intrinsically something more? Because something like the critical infrastructure of the critical information and infrastructure of the world is held within the bounds of these technology formats that we use in capturing geospatial data. It seems like in many cases the simple valuation models are thrown out the window in exchange for some premium. So while it's easy to look at expected revenue, it's not so easy to anticipate any return on these premiums. So I'm going to stop there and let you give your perspective on where maybe we should place the value of geospatial technology companies.
Well, and one of the challenges we have is that we talk about geospatial technology companies as if they're all the same and do the same thing and make the same products. And of course they don't. So if we look at acquisitions like TomTom acquiring Teleatlas and Nokia acquiring Navtech, those are parallel because Teleatlas and Navtech, at least to my mind, are data companies. They make data and they have the technology and the people to make the data. So to me, that's what TomTom and Nokia bought. if we think back to that time, and I think we even discussed this, the reason that they were making these acquisitions had to do with the fact that it was so hard to collect data and get it to that premium level that these two companies had that nobody could do it. And there's no way you could sort of jumpstart yourself to that level. So the best way to do it was to buy the data and buy the people and technology that make the data.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I remember we said that, other people said that, and I thought, okay, yeah, really, really smart. And then what happened? Not more than a couple years later, Google threw the baby out with the bathwater and said, hey, guess what? We're not going to license your data anymore. We're going to make our own.
Right, right.
And then all of a sudden, we started talking about data, U.S. data, European data, global data, as a commodity.
Hmm.
Okay, yeah. So you've just bought these data companies for billions of dollars and billions of euros, and the data is a commodity. You've got the data capture. You've got the people.
Yeah, and I think what you see now is with the introduction of OpenStreetMap, there are people evaluating the value of that as being a commodity, as you just said, and trying to understand whether that's a viable data set in juxtaposition to some of these other very expensive data sets like Nokia and TomTom have acquired.
And that's a really important point here in 2012, in that at one time, data was really valuable, right? And almost all of the GIS companies had a data arm where they either sold their own data or resold somebody else's data.
Yeah.
Remember those good old days?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, here we are in 2012, and data is value, geospatial data's value is so different, in part because it's approximately free. And I mean that in the sense of, for example, you can access data about where people take their Flickr photographs through an API from Yahoo. And you can access all kinds of information that people are putting up, crowdsourced by all kinds of different platforms, for free. And if the data isn't out there that you need, you can put together a crowdsourcing project and have people collect it for you. Now, mm-hmm. we can argue about the accuracy of that data, but it's just a whole different model. And the value isn't so much in the photographs and Flickr, it's in the community that is Flickr and the percentage of people that pay Yahoo a small premium every year to have a super duper account as opposed to the free account.
Yeah, and it's also the information that's collected along with that posting. Where did they post it? Article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, Foursquare is getting into couponing, and the way they're doing that is they're collecting all the check-in information. So this crowdsourcing of check-ins and this big data problem, right, is they're trying to assess the value and analyze the value of all of this data in order to monetize location-based information. And that's where always the hang-up has been in the mobile spaces. Nobody knew how to monetize it. We were all expecting advertising to fuel the value of these companies. But it's taken many years to place a value on all of that crowdsourced information.
And let's remember that that data about where I live now and how I operate now is very valuable to marketers now. But in a year, it'll be different.
Yeah, well, that's very true.
So that makes for a long-term market for changing data.
Well, right, right. And the real-time aspect, and that actually goes back to the issue of the Digital Globe GeoEye situation where people want to get closer to the real-time information data capturing, persistent surveillance, real-time video. And whether you do that in a satellite or in a different type of an airborne platform, it is tough when you're trying to value these companies that are very stationary, very, very huge investments in satellite platforms. And the model is changing with the advent of the coming UAV platforms that are going to be up there.
And satellites and disposable satellites. Imagery is like bread. It's great when it's fresh, and then it's not so interesting when it gets stale. And that's right on.
Yeah. That's very true. That's very true. And what we've tried to do is introduce these change detection models where you're taking historic imagery, looking at it with near real-time stuff or recently captured imagery, and then trying to assess what that information is that you're giving me.
Right. And the most exciting use of that in these times is there was a tornado before and after. Let's evaluate, pay insurance and rebuild, right?
Yeah. Let me bring the question back to one particular company. It's rumored that Esri is making about $1 billion a year. In light of that, let's just take that nice round number. The offer of $792 million for Digital Globe juxtaposed to Esri looks really cheap. You know, how do you put a value on a company like Esri where so much of the world's information is being captured by that software put into a format that is globally known? And I don't really necessarily want to focus on Esri because there's Autodesk and Bentley and Intergraph. There's so much data in these companies. To offer $1 billion for Esri, for example, would seem ludicrous, especially in light that Hexagon bought Intergraph for $2 billion. I couldn't imagine placing value on Esri because, again, the market leader. It just got me thinking, how do you put a value on all of that intrinsic data that we've captured using one or two pieces of software? I just think it introduces a question that we're maybe not evaluating the total market correctly, hence these weird valuations.
Right. Well, you just said that these companies hold the data, ESRI and Autodesk and Bentley and the like. From a legal standpoint, I don't want to talk about that, but so far as I'm concerned, if my city uses ESRI software and has maps of my city, they own the data. Mm-hmm. The city owns the data. It may be in ESRI's proprietary format, but they own the data. And they can do whatever they want with the data. And what are they starting to do with the data? Again, back to what I said before. They're pushing it out into the world. They're pushing it out to their constituents over the web. Some of them are sharing it with ESRI for the Community Base Maps program. Some of them are sharing it with OpenStreetMap. We're changing that whole idea of that geospatial data being worth something and being owned by somebody. And that changes the whole perspective. So what I think you're getting at, and again, this would be the argument if somebody were to bring an offer to ESRI and say, I would like to buy the company. What is it, in fact, they're buying? They're buying the user base.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there are some acquisitions that are all about that, right?
Yeah, right. Right.
I mean, certainly they're buying the technology and the IP and...
You're buying the recurring revenue.
Assuming that these people are going to stay using that same platform in the long term. And that is... this is not news. ESRI has been very successful because it gets customers in and it keeps them.
Right.
It expands how much of their software they use, and it's a great model. It's been incredibly successful. Now, other acquisitions are so different. If we look at a company like Facebook, right? They've got all kinds of acquisitions going on, the most exciting of which in the past couple of weeks has been Instagram for $1 billion.
Right.
Right. And what's that about? It's about people's own photographs that they share with other people and put through these filters, right? So again, the data part is kind of secondary. The people own the data. But Facebook has acquired... as of this week, three different geospatially related companies, Hot Potato, Gowalla, and Glancy. And what is it they were buying?
Had to be users. I would think user base.
None of those companies had any significant users. Gowalla was the largest of them, and they didn't have... they bought... It was they want the engineers.
Is it just technology? It was about the engineers.
Yeah. Yeah. They're investing in the future development by buying engineers.
Hmm.
And I would make the same argument that that's what Apple did when it bought PlaySpace and Poly9 mm-hmm. and CG Technologies.
Right.
I mean, the technology
right.
that came with them may play into it, but they wanted the smartest folks who do that kind of work.
Hmm.
So that's the value of those companies, so far as I'm concerned. Because if those companies had been more successful at what they did, they would have had larger user bases. They wouldn't have been the targets of acquisition. In fact, they probably would have been acquiring themselves. They would have been buying technology to grow their situation, and none of them got to that level.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that I think it's really interesting to look at this time is what are the big, big companies buying or not buying? What is Google buying? What is Microsoft buying in geospatial? And if you look at it, Google didn't buy a data company. Could have. I mean, you suggest in the past, Google, Microsoft, one of those, could have bought one of these satellite imaging companies and didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But both companies, both Microsoft and Google, have bought data capture tools, airplanes with sensors that can capture mm-hmm. data.
Yeah, the Vexcel acquisition that Microsoft did, yeah.
Right, and Google also bought a small aerial imaging company that sort of, it happened so quickly and most people have forgotten about it, but it did some years ago. But they haven't bought anything else. In fact, Google just got rid of SketchUp, which might have been a tool that users could have used to populate Google Earth, but it got rid of that. So somehow they don't feel that buying data or even buying software engineers of the kind that Facebook and Apple are buying is in their best interest.
Yeah, it certainly spawns an interesting dynamic and question if you go all the way back to what we originally talked about, which is there value in the data or in the anticipated premium on the data? And I just don't see that in the discussion. The discussion on our comments boards about the Digital Globe acquisition is really all about the viability of the commercial space and whether launching satellites is a good investment. And what it comes down to is, unless you got the government in their back pocket, it's not viable. So something has to change in order for those companies to be valued differently. And I don't see that on the horizon. There's nothing that would change. It's expensive to launch satellites. It's expensive to capture data. I don't see any crowdsourcing of remotely sensed data on the horizon like there is in check-in data.
Well,
so
it's
tough.
Careful. What about those folks with the balloons?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. You know, or yeah, with balloons or any kind of a cheap platform. At least now that's legal. You know, not thinking of the UAS situation.
Right. If you, I don't mean to be completely facetious here, but if you combine the inexpensive tools, cameras, and the inexpensive kinds of devices like balloons, and the energy behind the maker movement.
Mm-hmm.
You put
mm-hmm.
those together.
Yeah.
You do. You could potentially have serious value in crowdsourced imagery data.
Imagery data, yeah.
I mean, not right now, but it certainly could happen.
Well, it's one of those things that changes a market. You could argue that the technology is cheap. Right now, it's not hard to acquire location-based information. It's not like you couldn't put a cheap GPS piece of equipment attached to a camera and send up a little balloon. There will be changes out there that will change the valuation of companies for sure and how data is acquired. So it's something we'll look at as things progress.
And so much of this goes back to, and you were suggesting this too, with the business model of the company. And the business model of TeleAtlas and Nokia and Digital Globe and GeoEye were pretty much the same. We capture data, and then we license it to people to use. Right? That's what they did.
Yeah, that's what it is, yeah.
And that model isn't playing out quite the way it used to, for all the reasons that we've discussed. So they've got to find a new model. And frankly, that's what the Foursquares of the world are doing. We've got this other set of data that we're collecting just by virtue of how our application works. How are we going to turn that into something more valuable? And if they can answer that question, they've got a long-term business model, and maybe they will be acquired someday.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll leave it there for now. We're interested in your opinions. We'd love to hear your feedback on how you think geospatial companies might be valued. This podcast is brought to you by Intergraph. Complete your existing desktop GIS by engaging a larger audience with your geospatial assets. With GeoMedia Smart Client, individuals across your organization can easily create data, maps, and reports. Finally, even novice GIS users can leverage advanced GIS functionality in a smart way. To learn more, visit intergraph.com/geospatial. If you'd like to comment about today's podcast, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment where this podcast is posted on Directions Magazine. From us here at Directions Magazine, it's just a week before our Location Intelligence Conference in Washington, D.C. We hope to see you there this year. You can find out more information at locationintelligence.net. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.